the cyber risk leader tell all, and that's our global virtual book club, first ever edition. So you guys are the privileged first batch to join us for this. And with that, we are ready to start. So maybe I'll let my co-host Carmen Marsh, all the way from California, introduce herself and maybe tell us, why did we even start this? You know, how did the idea came about?
Absolutely. Well, I am just as excited as you are, Shemaine. So my name is Carmen Marsh, and I'm the CEO of Intelligenza. We had a consulting company in Roseville, California. And I'm also the founder of 100 Women in 100 Days Cybersecurity Career Accelerator and Cybersecurity Woman of the Year Awards.
Amazing. And,
well, a little bit about why we wanted to do the book club, right? I mean, that's it's a new concept. For at least for us, I've never done a book club before, but I've heard like Simon Sinek do a book club and has been having just a great review. So why not do something like this? And this is an awesome book.
Thank you.
I know you've got a lot of readers already across the world, but there's still some that haven't read it. So this is kind of a good way to do the preview, you know, go through the chapters, talk a little bit more about it, and that's the reason why we should do this, right? Have more readers.
Thank you very much, Carmen. So I was really excited when she reached out to me and said, hey, why don't let's do this, what Simon Sinek is doing. And I checked it out and I thought, that's really interesting, because at the end of the day, this book featured like lots of great insights from many, many different CISOs or cyber risk leaders and other C executives as well. And I thought there's a lot of good pointers we can take on to discuss. And today I'm really excited to have three speakers here that have been featured in this book. So Carmen from the US, thank you. It's late at night. You've taken your evening for this. And then Sander Swinkers, give a wave so people know which one is Sander. I mean, there's the name there, but there you go. And Theo as well, Theo Nasilkas from Australia. Then he moved to Singapore and then moved back to Australia again. Lots of history. But before I get to them, just going to introduce myself. So I'm Shemaine Tan. I'm the author of Cyber Risk Leaders. My day job is really just an executive advisor where I work with C-suite or the CISOs and other cyber risk leaders to help them bridge their business gaps. Over on to you, Sander Swinkers from Singapore. Introduce yourself.
Thanks, Shemaine. And really exciting to be here in this first virtual book club of your book. A short introduction. I'm the CEO of DTACT, formerly known as DutchEgg. Spent 18 years in the Dutch government in the intelligence community as their chief. Moved then to the startup landscape, worked for Palantir from the US and helped them to build the Asian market. And excited to be here today.
Thanks, Sander. And Theo?
Yeah, thanks, Shemaine. So, thanks for having me on board. Theo Nasiokas, I'm with Westpac at the moment as the head of technology governance and controls for the business and specialist businesses portfolios. Formerly the APAC CISO at Barclays, and over the last two decades, a string of tech risk and cybersecurity roles. And prior to that, I was a sworn policeman in Victoria, in Australia, where I ended up in the drug squad and the Bureau of Criminal Intelligence. And now here I am, a humble banker.
Very humble. Thank you, Theo. Yeah, it's great. We have a lot of people tuning in, actually, from all over the world. So I know Sander's in Singapore, it's early morning right now for him. You know, Carmen's in the US, it's evening. We, Theo and myself, in Sydney, Australia, so it's about 11 a.m. over here. But I can see, like, there's people tuning in from different parts of Asia, as well as other parts in the US. So we have a really good crowd here joining us for our virtual book club. So without further ado, let's just get on to today's topic. We are going to be covering three different things. Well, very interesting topics, actually. Geopolitical events. It's one of Theo's favorite conversation. Geopolitical events versus the patterns, looking at the different patterns when we look at different cyber attacks. And then we will move on to talk about, how can we be creative in our approach when it comes to looking for the right talent in the cybersecurity pool of talent. How do we grow that? How can we be creative? So yesterday, Carmen, Sander, and myself, we were having a chat, and it's really fascinating the different things that they have shared. And then finally, we will touch on, like, you know, given in this times where we're in a pandemic situation, what does a CISO look like currently who's in this pandemic situation and post-pandemic, right? How can they move forward? And some practical skills. So there's quite a lot to cover. We'll try to get through as much as possible. All right. And we'll start off first with Phil. Maybe do you want to share some of your thoughts regarding, you know, maybe you want to share with our listeners what we were talking about yesterday.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say something. I have lots of thoughts. Like, for example, 10 past 11 in the morning on a Friday is very close to not too far from alcohol time. But my thoughts are, so when I think about cybersecurity and Charmaine, this has always been my mantra. I always think of cyber and cyber events and cyber attacks and APTs. I see them as part of a bigger picture, which is usually a series of geopolitical events. And there's been many, many examples of that. So, for example, I briefly mentioned the other day, we had the Singhealth attack in Singapore 2 years ago. It was discovered that there were compromise between 27th of June and 4th of July or thereabouts. And interestingly, the adjoining event there was on the 12th of June, the Kim Trump summit. Okay, so very, very interesting. And I won't go into detail about why they're connected because we don't have enough time here. But another one here in Australia, which is very recent, was our Prime Minister defied China on the 29th of April, announcing that he would want China to cooperate in a SARS-CoV-2 investigation, which is the virus that gives humans COVID-19. And now has the support of 62 countries. And then coincidentally, and I use that word very loosely, on the 8th of May, so 9 days later, the Australian Signals Directorate issued a security advisory warning 220-004, which is to the healthcare sector, advising of impending cyber hacking and data compromise for the purpose of stealing both identity information as well as intellectual property, which could be used to formulate COVID vaccines. So it's an interesting time. And for me, looking at attribution with regard to cyber events, whilst technical attribution is very important, that's the process of decompiling malicious code and understanding what it's been designed to do, which also sometimes gives us a view into the signature of who the coder might have been or whose code it was based on. I think it's important we follow a similar intelligence process around, is this related to any events? And if it's an APT from an advanced source, they, not all, but many tend to be state-sponsored, and you can almost bet that they're tied to a geopolitical event of some sort. So I'm going to stop there for a second, because I've got a habit of talking way too much, and see what your thoughts are there for a moment.
Thanks, Jill. Sander, comment, anything to add?
I think Theo makes a very interesting point because if you look at the cyber threats that organizations or governments are dealing with, most of the case it's incident driven. So they look at what they see on a daily basis, what comes in on threats. If you think of becoming ahead of the game and trying to predict or understand why certain things are happening and what the actual risk is, it's what Theo said. It's maybe times it could be correlated to geopolitical events. It could be related to the business model of the type of attackers. Theo mentioned state-sponsored. That's one of the mechanisms on why attacks happen. Some state-sponsored attacks is purely to create like chaos. Others is to create and steal like intellectual property, commercial stuff. And there's the pure business model on making money. The other thing is that the geopolitical event right now with the whole COVID situation has one thing, obviously, that the economy is down now. It's hearts significantly. And one thing we I dare to predict is that it would mean that there are countries, people and organizations who will find a way to make money through a cybercrime web. Because if there's a shortage of money and if the economy is down, if people are losing their jobs, it's an easy step to actually move to crime. It happened everywhere so far, even when we talk about regular crime, not cybercrime. But it's extremely easy to buy like a cyber attack thing for $100 on the dark web, to do like a ransomware attack or whatever it is. So one thing I do predict in the next coming months is that the amount of crime actually will increase based on the current COVID situation.
Yeah, we have actually been seeing that already, and there is an interesting trend and pattern to note as well. And this brings it really nicely to something that Carmen mentioned in the book itself, like in page 69. And she mentioned about, you know, as a business, it's really important about how we should be appearing strong and resilient, right? Because we want to continuously gain customers' trust. But how, what kind of, if you want, the rest of you can extend on that and elaborate, how can we do that? Like maybe as a security leader, as a CISO in today's world, you know, what can they be, what are the tips you would have for them that's applicable right now and also moving forward as we get out of the pandemic situation?
Yeah, I think it's now especially important, right? Because there's so many people working from home. And so we're bringing the companies home. And that's outside of the corporate networks, right? So the security is definitely lacking, regardless of having a VPN, you know, having, you know, encryption. We're much more vulnerable working from home. So, and I think that's the bad actors out there. They just know that, right? So I think we just need to heighten. So we need to heighten the awareness. We need to stay on top of tips. You know, just give recommendations to anyone who actually takes it seriously. Excuse me. So there's too many companies still out there. I think they're trying to survive at this moment. So maybe security is still not on top of their mind, but it should be, right? To survive. So yeah, I don't know if Theo and Sandra has anything to add to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I always have something to add, Carmen, so you should never ask me that question.
Very good.
It's part of my Greek heritage. I never stop talking. So, look, yeah, I couldn't agree more. And the steps, the really tactical and pragmatic steps you take is re-examine what you think your security controls are in the current environment. You have more people working from home, fine. What does that mean in terms of both logical and physical controls? Are there any changes? There may be some changes. So you may automatically think, well, it's okay because I issued lockdown build machines and it's all cool. But what you may find is, well, have those lockdown build machines been tested for their ability to print on your home printer? And the answer is probably not. And then the other question is, let's not forget physical controls. So people think when we talk about cyber, it's all online, and it's not.
No.
In many, many examples of some of the most famous hackers in the world, including Kevin Mitnick, who I love talking about Kevin, who days before printing a hack would go through the corporate dumpsters and get data on paper, would hang out at car parks and have cigarettes with the staff during their cigarette breaks and get information from them. And then eventually on day 3 or 4, after the break, walk back into the office with the staff and never be challenged when he didn't even work there. So physical controls need to be considered as well as logical controls. And also, please don't forget in that thinking to include your critical third-party providers as well. Mm. Also got staff working from home and their controls environment and needs may change accordingly. And it's good to have a view. That's what I think.
Absolutely. And we have to continue carrying on the mindset, right, to keep our business resilient. I mean, there's no, I think for the longest time we've had a separation. Oh, that's an IT thing. Cybersecurity, information security is an IT thing. is no longer fighting. It hasn't been. And I know a lot of companies have moved, and they actually, you know, consider that being important to business. It's a business thing. It's not an IT thing. Because you have to stay resilient. You have to, for you to continue doing business and continue, you know, building trust with your customers, you have to be resilient. You have to show that you've taken, you know, security seriously, right? And so that doesn't happen overnight, but you have to keep working on that. And so I don't know, Sandra, if you had anything else to add to that, but yeah, definitely not an IT issue or problem.
And like Theo, always have something to add as well. If you look at the cyber threat, I think the biggest mistake many companies make, like there's one threat, or it's an IT thing, like you said. And that's, if you look at the whole context of your security measures, it's like your physical security. It's your insider threat. It's the traditional approach of building a wall around your IP, your crown jewels. And what we advise many times when we think of your security framework is not to think of one mechanism which defends everything, but to think of different maturity stages for different parts of the security and to think what you have to implement on that. And back to the whole COVID situation now, Theo mentioned the human, the cigarette breaks, how people try to get in. Just imagine if you lay off people right now, there's a high chance that the insider threat risk also increases. So from yes. all the spectrums and maturity stages you need to get in mm-hmm. place, also focus on the risk of your employees right now and the ones that might not be happy at this point in time.
Yeah.
So some of those policies and procedures, internal policies and procedures, are super important too. So you carry out you know, the right measures when people are being laid off, right? So you shut down the accounts, you do certain things that you're supposed to do when people are leaving the company. And so just be aware of that. You know, it's with everything going on, sometimes that is not on top of people's minds, but it should be.
Yeah, definitely. Nope. And if I want to take it a bit to a different direction, right? So when you mentioned, Sandra, like now people are being laid off, you know, they're out of jobs and stuff. And we are seeing that budgets naturally are also being cut, right? So in, for example, in chapter 5, where we talk about the good CISO, okay, and all the different traits of them that they should have, one of two key things that I would like to highlight out of the 15 tips is we talk about like security being seen as an enabler, which is very a common topic about. But the thing is that when you talk about it practically, how can CISOs or security leaders like yourself look at still positioning it as an enabler, even with the constraints of budgets being cut? You know, what are the ways we can go about it to still push that awareness, still portray in the right light?
Yeah. So I think it's kind of, whilst it sounds very challenging, at a high level, it isn't that complicated, because a lot of companies now are announcing their their half year profit results in Australia as well. And of course their actual results are far smaller than the forecast, which was made, you know, 6 or 9 months ago. No one saw COVID coming. The answer is pretty simple for me. That is, it's up to whatever business you're in to decide what it wants to do in terms of business strategy. And the cybersecurity is really an enabler of whatever that strategy looks like, big or small, expanding or contracting, right? So, you know, I can say something really poignant, like quote Bruce Lee and say, be like water, but I won't do that. What I'm trying to say is, it doesn't matter whether it's a big or a small business. The same principles apply, the same due diligence applies, the same thinking has to apply. And so you've got a strategy that is commensurate, that is feasible to your business, expanding or contracting. But what you don't do is you don't say, oh, my budget's been cut, the world's coming to an end, I can't do it anymore. That's not the answer. The answer is, yes, you may have a smaller budget, but we provide a feasible service to whatever that business is looking like now and what it's going to look like moving forward, because it might look very different.
No, that's a really good view. And also that reminded me of Dan Lawman, another guy, another sizer in the US that was in the book. And he talked about, you know, getting on, like, look at what are the current projects that are running at the moment, right? And then being involved in those key meetings, make sure that you are there physically, and then you have a voice as well. And you can leverage off the current projects that are being run to still influence them, to show that security is, you know, in the at the forefront, you're thinking about it, people are talking about it, and working with the business to help bring that achieve their priorities, but, you know, putting on that security lens as well. So
I call it elastic cyber.
Sorry, what?
Elastic cyber.
Elastic cyber.
Elastic.
That's a good term. Yes. And actually, Theo, it was one of your quote where I was just thinking, you know, in chapter 5, we talk about being a good size means you need to know your strengths and weaknesses, right? Because when you know that, then you can apply your your skills are transferable, whichever times you are in. Yes. You want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I said that to you, Charmaine, but I really can't take credit for it. The guy who said it first was Sun Tzu, the Chinese general, who said something like, if you know your enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the outcome of 100 battles. If you don't know your enemy and know yourself, for every victory, you will suffer a defeat. And if you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. And what we're saying there is, from a cyber perspective, not only understanding your controls environment, physical and logical, but also understand yourself. You can't be good at everything. So you have to have people around you that have the competencies and skills that you don't have. So together, the whole team is greater than the sum of the parts. That's what that means.
So do you think that the role of CISO has changed, and in what way now that we are in the new world? I mean, is there something else that CISOs have to think about in this new world?
I think I think that the role of the CISO and how it's changing, in my view, certainly it shouldn't be a material change because of the COVID-19 global pandemic. I think that CISOs lived in a what I would call a relative state of flux anyway. And COVID is just another layer of flux. I think that CISOs clearly have always needed to be, and it's becoming clearer now that they need to be, individuals capable of dynamic lateral thinking and being able to, you know, think on your feet and make it up on the fly. It's not a mathematical process. It isn't one skill set. It's not a degree in network security or a certification from AWS. It's everything. It's everything. You've got to be a good business strategist, a good compliance person, a good marketing person, a good influencer and salesperson, a good lawyer to some degree, a good technical IT person, and a mishmash of that. And the mishmash that works depends on the company, its needs, and its culture.
That's great. Sander, you can actually share a lot about this because your experience is very unique as well. You've seen a lot working in intelligence forces and all the way from Netherlands to different parts of the world. So what kind of lessons CISOs can take away and apply into this
process? Exactly. And I think, Sander, you said something yesterday too, that this is, you know, unfortunate situation we're in as a world. But this may be elevating CISOs in a different light, right? So the importance of CISOs may be heightened because of the, you know, increase of threats. So, you know, it's a good and a bad thing, right?
That's it's always a good and a bad thing about everything. But what we see is that this might be an opportunity for CISOs to actually get elevated because there's more digitalization across the business. So the rest of the leadership team might actually expect the CISO to elevate and to step up. On the other hand, the CISO also has to step up. And what Cleo mentioned, CISO is a construct of many things at the same time. What definitely is not helping in many cases is that it's purely looked at from a compliance perspective. That okay, let's tick the box on all the things we have to in place and make sure we have something. No, it's a team of talent, it's a technology you have, it's thinking of the different maturity stages you need to have in place for what part of your business to actually protect it, and also be able to explain it towards the rest of the leadership on what is the opportunity, the business case around it, the threats. And so, yes, there's an opportunity for CISOs to step up and to get elevated, but the CISOs also have to be ready to actually step up and look beyond. Sometimes compliance mode they have to go.
Excellent. And just conscious that Theo has a couple more minutes because he will need to hop off. So Theo, whenever you need to jump off, just let us know, give us a wave. But to the rest of the listeners out there, we still have about 10 more minutes to go. And if you guys have any questions, you know, you can actually type in your questions in the chat box and we'll try to get through them. If we can't, we will be sending it out to the rest of the speakers and they will, you know, address it and then we'll try to get the answers across to you as well. So feel free to keep your questions coming. We're just going to move on to the next part now, which is something that Sander shared in the book actually about hiring, and it's really interesting. So that was in page 25, where he talked about using an embedded social enterprise model, and more of half of his staff actually had autism spectrum diagnosis. And you know, maybe Sander, you want to talk a bit more about that. And Carmen, you have done a lot of great work in this space, but in a different way as well. So feel free.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, it's something I'm extremely passionate about in many ways. But let me first start with the underlying issue. I just mentioned, if you think of your cyber strategy, it's a combination of technology, people, the team that you have. And what we see that not all the technology is giving like a generic view on all the things which are happening. But most importantly, people and a team who actually is able to work with the data, think of the threats, how to mitigate it, what to do. And everybody's looking for talent, but everybody is looking at the same pool of talent. There's more need for talent, and it's a global problem. It's not you hire them from a different country and you have more talent. So there's one way you have to do is look at diversity. What are the other angles on how to get talent into your business, into your company? And when I looked at DTACT, when I was asked to become the CEO, like there was three things which intrigued me. One, I saw more than 400 features and products which have been building over 2 years, which I've never seen before in my life. The impact that they created with it, but thirdly, the whole social mission aspect around it. One of the founders is on the spectrum, and all the money they made, they actually invested it back into the company to create jobs for people who are on the autism spectrum. So, and we're not a social enterprise, but we're a real company with a real product having a social mission. And what we figured out, and I can talk for hours about this, we have seen people, and I tell this to inspire others, not as a marketing story, who literally were living on the street, who have been told for 7 years, like, you will never be able to have a job. We had people who never coded in their life, but what we did know and did feel that they have talent, the two things which other people are not capable of. And so what we did, we started a program and talking about diversity. Being in the police and intelligence and the military space for a long time, I remember when we got the first women into the security services. They had a hard time, and it were only a few people, and they had to prove a very hard, like, what the position is compared to all the white men working in the organization. And what we learned is you need a certain bandwidth of people, of a certain diversity to actually make it work. So what we see in other companies that they try it sometimes with one or two people in the corner who are neurodiverse, and it works or it doesn't work. But if you really want to make a change, you have to make it part of your whole business. And that's what we did. So that's why it's half of the staff which is either diagnosed or non-diagnosed in the autism spectrum. And what we see, it takes a lot of investment to figure out what the actual talent skill is. It takes a lot of investment to help them with non-work related stuff a social interaction, a low self-esteem sometimes, even depressions in some cases. But once you get that right, you get so much in return. You get high productivity, extremely loyal employees. They are willing to work an extra mile. And what we decided to do that with our commercial expansion globally, we also want to expand this idea and trying to inspire others, invite everybody, come look at how we do this. And this is a way how to get talent, which you need, like we need talent. And this is the first step, no. Based on the commercial bandwidth we have and the revenue we have, we actually have a waiting list of the people that we could put on a job. So the more we grow, the more people we actually can deploy. And once we're done with this, we will focus on, for example, veterans. I'm a former veteran. That's another category. And the point I try to make, think of diversity as an opportunity to get the talent which everyone needs.
I'm fascinated, and that's and it's so important. I think, like you said, a lot of companies are still looking at the same pool of talent. And also we talked about that a little bit yesterday, that, you know, most of those people coming, you know, they're taking the same path into information security, into cybersecurity. We need to have a creative people that are creative, people that are coming from different backgrounds, right? We know now, I mean, there's been enough of that talent in the field that we know it's beneficial for everyone, right? They are thriving. The companies benefit from it. So our cybersecurity accelerator, we're taking a different path. We're actually doing the fast track program for women. And our women are everything from mothers returning back to work. We have women veterans. We have students that maybe just graduated, but they really don't know where they want to go. And cybersecurity field is something they're interested in, but this is really giving them a good foundation to get into a hands-on position, because our program also includes internship and apprenticeship. So they're able to get a hands-on while they're getting some technical certifications. And then they get the foot in the door to get like an entry-level job. So it's just exciting to see that, because I think, we do need to have more diversity and different thinking. It's not all just, the old infrastructure path, the old, software development path, right? That's how most of us got into the field. So it's fascinating that you took that route. And I think more companies should be doing that, because that's the way to get more talent, put some more effort. Yeah, maybe it is definitely some more investment of time that's needed, right? Because you have to bring them up because they don't have the traditional background. But at the same time, it's paying off. It sounds like it's paying off for your company. And I think it's going to be pay off for a lot of other company if they start thinking in those terms. You know, super important.
No, thanks for that endorsement, Carmen. And you're absolutely right. And we want to inspire others to follow it. It's not our IP. Our product is our IP, but not how we do this. But what it means is not like you start tomorrow and let's kick it off. You have to invest in something, and yeah, you have to think differently and also more creative as an enterprise or organization. How do you get the talent on board? Because if you think traditionally, I need a job description, I need a resume, you know that you will not find these people, because in many cases they don't have a resume which meets all these things. And literally we have people who, what I said, never coded in their life, but were trained as a musician, able to compose music. And we figured, hey, if you're able to compose music, you might be able to be creative and to code in coding, as we say. And we took that and it worked out.
That's incredible. And what
I see, and that's really what intrigued me with the whole COVID situation, with people working from home, that we always talk about difficulties with social interaction. And actually, a lot of the employees right now say, we miss the social interaction.
Yeah.
And that's so extremely wonderful. And we want to inspire others to follow our lead, and happy to advise anyone on how to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, that we all need that, right? Any company, any hiring manager should really be open-minded and think in just different terms. And some are opening up, for some it may take a lot of time, but we're here. I mean, I'm happy to talk about that too. You know, anybody or any woman that's maybe listening in and is interested to take this fast track program that we have, you know, send me a note. I'll be happy to you know, tell you more about it and how you enroll and what to expect.
Yeah, just like honestly, Carmen is just one of an amazing person where she's running lots of great initiatives. And if you follow her on LinkedIn, you will see all the different programs. It's extremely hard to keep up, but it's such an inclusive program where anyone who has an interest in this industry, there are so many initiatives and ways to support people into getting further in their career as well. So I think it's great. And likewise, follow Sander and Theo. We have so many people that, you know, the more we do this, I find like it just blows my mind because everyone has such a unique story of, first of all, of how they've come into our industry, but also the kind of work they are doing to spread the message. It's just incredible. Very heartwarming. Yeah, so we are seeing quite a few questions that have come in as well, but I'm not sure if we can cover them in this session. We probably will have to cover them in the next episode with Carmen. Carmen is and I, we are continuing to do this over the next few weeks. So we'll take note of these questions that have come in and we will get the different speakers to address it as well. But Sander and Phil will also still put their thoughts on this. Yes. Carmen, anything else you want to add?
No, but you as the author of the book, is there something that your favorite part or something you want to add? This is really about your book and your wonderful job on bringing all these insights from global leaders in a one collection. You know, I love it. So any final word from you for this session?
Wow. You caught me there. I need to think about it because I think it's just something very enriching. Like I feel it's a journey, right? As we all go about, we keep learning more and more. And we learn faster when we are learning from, we are taking the time to actually learn from other people who have gone ahead of us or who are doing different things. So I really see the beauty of this ecosystem and community there is. So in terms of what I've taken away, I feel it's just a lot. And I think what I can say is that we just really need to keep pressing in and keep actively learning from our mentors. Find mentors you can learn from. Find people that you know, like everyone is willing to help each other. You just need to ask. And like even our listeners here, right, they're taking the time to just press in and learn as much as they can from different people. So I think the hunger is what will keep us, you know, becoming the better versions of ourselves, even as we are, you know, doing our different roles as cyber risk leaders in this day and age. So that's for today. That's my tip for today. I will give a different one for the next time.
No, well said, Shemaine. I love what you do. You're amazing. I mean, you are also doing so many different things and you've accomplished so much. So, you know, just very thankful for knowing you and excited to, you know, I'm always excited to share any project. We've done quite a few projects in the past, right? So we've done this Global CISOs Town Hall. You've been a judge on Cybersecurity Woman of the Year, you know, judging panel. And so now it's time to do this book club. And I, you know, it's great.
Yeah, I wouldn't be here without people like you guys. You know, you all have taken time to invest and also share your insights. So it's all teamwork. And with that, I just want to let me just go through. Yes, yeah. So for those who are listening, you know, you can get a copy of this clip on the YouTube channel. Just check Cyber Risk Meetup on the YouTube channel. It will be up and you can share your friends who have missed this session as well. We're also going to be on podcast and it's called the Mega C-Suite Stories. You can find it on Spotify or your other favorite podcast channel. So the link is there too. And that's pretty much it. For those who have no idea what this book is about, you can check it out on Amazon, Google Play Books, or you can get a hard copy available at the link that I provided, which is mysecuritymarketplace.com. And you just search for cyber risk leaders and it come up. And, you know, we only managed to cover a bit today, but there's a lot more that all like Phil, Sander and Carmen has actually shared in the book itself. So you can feel free to read up and catch up on it.
Well, thank you all. Yeah, it was great. Meeting you, Sander, and Theon already said bye, but I'm sure we can talk to him again.
He dropped off like an invisible ninja.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks for organizing this, guys, and just to iterate what you did, Charmaine, is you united all of us, and not just all of us who are in the book, but also the people who read it. And I think continue on this journey as long as we share this knowledge, we share with each other on what the challenges are, we will keep great things as a community. And I think that's the first thing we need to do as participants, readers, etc. So good work. I'm proud.
Thank you, Sander. You are an inspiration. So thank you, everyone, for your time today, for joining us in our first book club session. We are looking forward to our next one. Carmen has prepared a few very interesting speakers, actually. So stay tuned for that. We will be sending out the details once it's ready.
Yeah, we'll be back.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Sander, for your time.
Thanks, Carmen.
Take care. Bye.